What happens when you cut taxes in a tight labor market? From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for David Brancaccio. The House and Senate are still working out the details of their tax plans, with the aim in both chambers to lower taxes on businesses large and small. The idea is, according to Republicans, that businesses will use that extra cash to hire more workers and raise wages. David Kelly is Chief Global Strategist at J.P. Morgan Funds. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we've got some new information today from the National Federation of Independent Businesses. What does that group have to say about the kind of economy these proposed tax cuts would enter?
Well, it's pretty good. The Small Business Confidence Index in October was up, and it was already at a pretty high level. But I think the other interesting thing is it shows that the economy is really running at full employment. 88% of businesses in October who said they tried to hire somebody said they could find few or no qualified applicants. So I know that it's called a Jobs Act, but the real question is, where can we find the workers? Because America really seems to be pretty much hired up at this stage.
So how would the GOP tax plans play into that, though?
The cut in personal taxes is actually in some ways rather troubling, because if you do more consumer spending but you don't have more available workers, that will probably tend to push up imports and actually worsen the trade deficit. We may get a little bit of an increase in wages. It does, though, point to the importance of cutting the corporate tax in the long run, because we need more productivity growth. We've got to find some way of making workers more productive, because even though a lot of people are hired in America, wages are still pretty low, and one of the keys to fixing that is to increase productivity.
David Kelly is Chief Global Strategist at J.P. Morgan Funds. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
The International Energy Agency just released its annual World Energy Outlook this morning. According to the report, the U.S. is on its way to becoming the world's, quote, undisputed global oil and gas leader, end quote. That's right in line with the aims of the Trump administration. At the UN climate talks in Germany, the White House officials are focused on fossil fuels and nuclear power. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more.
America's delegation at the climate talks is all about efficient coal, natural gas, and nuclear as a response to climate change. John Hoffmeister is CEO of Citizens for Affordable Energy, which promotes natural gas.
It is scientifically irresponsible to think that we can replace the energy density of nuclear and fossil energy with wind and solar.
He says renewables alone won't get us close to emissions targets. Rob Jackson at the Global Carbon Project at Stanford forecasts that worldwide fossil fuel emissions will reach a record in 2017. He says reversing that trend isn't cheap, whether you try clean coal or anything else.
Who pays for that?
Utilities and their customers don't want to foot the bill. Nuclear cuts emissions, but building a new plant is really expensive.
So until there's some sort of national policy incentivizing those industries, I don't see either nuclear or clean coal taking a bite out of our energy needs.
He says to diversify the energy mix in whatever direction, the U.S. has to start investing now. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Although those international climate talks are happening in Germany, the host nation is actually Fiji. That arrangement highlights the plight of island nations who stand to lose the most from climate change. Marketplace's Jed Kim reports.
Christine Zinnemann grew up on the tiny island nation of Kiribati. It's in the South Pacific, about halfway between Hawaii and Australia. Climate scientists say her homeland will be totally underwater within 100 years and unlivable even earlier than that.
We'll be the first to go. There is no doubting that. It's just a matter of when.
Zinnemann is honorary consul for Kiribati, based in Los Angeles. She's looking to ease the country's inevitable relocation.
Right now, the aim is to prepare our country for a migration with dignity.
She wants to improve education so that the Kiribati diaspora will be more welcomed by other countries. She also hopes to set up some kind of income for the 100,000 or so residents. Selling the island's fishing rights may be a way. The waters teem with valuable tuna. But without sovereign land, future fishing rights are unclear. Holly Doremus is with the Law of the Sea Institute at UC Berkeley. She says fishing zones are based on distance from land, land above water.
The assumption on which that was based was that sea level was basically stable. And knowing that that's not true suggests the need to rework this.
That conversation has barely begun. Zinnemann says it's just one issue of so many.
The global community has labeled Kiribati as climate refugees. There are no laws for climate refugees.
Other island nations like Fiji, the Marshall Islands, and Vanuatu stand to lose a lot or even all of their land to rising water, despite emitting very little carbon themselves. The UN has a green climate fund. It has richer, more polluting countries pay to help poorer countries adapt.
That's kind of the way the world's set about trying to solve this, but it's insufficient.
Oceanographer Gregory Stone is a science advisor to Kiribati and part of its climate delegation. He says, don't think of climate aid as a handout.
It implies that they don't have what it takes to get something done. It's more like they need justice.
Justice that could take the form of legal damages or reparations. But Stone says so far, that argument hasn't made it into formal UN agreements. I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
And in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.